For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site. Today is August the 31st. Picking up where we left off, we are on page 466. So we're about to go through each of the Bigdei Kuhuna, each of the priestly garments. And tonight is going to be the ephod, which is the apron. And you have a picture over there, at least one rendition of it. As with all pictures that have to do with Chumash, it's only one possibility. There are other versions of the same thing. But you notice it's an apron. It runs around the back of the Kohen Gadol. And there is a belt at the top, which connects. It's a little bit hard to see that belt, but there's a belt at the top that that ties together in the front. And there are also shoulder straps that come up. Now, the picture here is a little bit misleading because it appears like the shoulder straps are attached in the back of the apron, which they are not. So that's always the danger with pictures, but we will try to describe it as best as possible. Now, the Kohen Gadol wore 8 garments. The regular Kohen wore 4 garments. I know we talked about this already, but we need to discuss it now in order to get our bearings for the next several weeks. So, which garments were worn by the Kohen Hedot, by the regular Kohen? Okay. So he wore pants, which are mechnasayim. He wore ksones, which is a tunic. The tunic ran from the neck all the way down. Okay. Okay. He wore a belt. He wore a belt. And he wore a hat. He wore a hat and a belt. The belt held the tunic together. The tunic went all the way down. The belt came around the tunic, and he had pants on underneath the tunic. So those are the 4 garments that the Kohen Hedyot, Susan, that the regular Kohen wore. And that's it. 4 garments. What's that?
A tunic.
No, no, a tunic is like a long shirt.
It's on the head.
It's on the head.
No, no, that's it's 4 garments and only 4 garments. And that's it. So the feet were bare. There was no undershirt other than the tunic. The tunic was against the skin, and the belt on top of the tunic, and the hat. That was it.
They wore linen underpants.
That's it. Just pants.
Okay.
Right. Now the Kohen Gadol, the high priest, had those same 4 garments, and then 4 more. The 4 more garments that he had went above the 4 that were already worn. So picture the Kohen Gadol wearing already the 4 garments that the regular Kohen, the Kohen Hedyot, wore. So he's got on pants, and he's got on a tunic all the way down, and he's got on the belt, which goes around the tunic, and he's got a hat on. But then the Kohen Gadol also wore 4 other garments. Now, one, which we'll get to much later, is the tzitz. That's the headband. It went across the forehead, and it was attached in the back of the head and went over the hat as well, and it came down. We'll describe that when we get to it. But it was a band. There is something else that the Kohen wore, which is tefillin. Remember that tefillin, in modern times, we don't do this because we're concerned that we will not treat the tefillin with the proper respect. But the true mitzvah of the Torah is that tefillin should be worn all day. And therefore, the Kohen wore tefillin all day. So the tzitz was across the forehead. The hat was not in the front of the head. It was more towards the back of the head. And the tefillin went between the end of the hat and the front of the tzitz. Went between the hat and the tzitz is where the tefillin went. So he had that on as well. But that's the head. So then, over his torso, in addition to the tunic and the belt, he had three other garments. Now, these three other garments were the ephod, which we're about to learn about, which is the apron, and there was also the choshen. The choshen is probably the most famous or the most well-known of the garments of the Kohen Gadol. Anytime you see a rendition of what the Kohen Gadol might have looked like, you notice that he had the breastplate, the choshen, with the 12 stones, different color stones, each one representing one of the tribes of Israel. So he had the choshen, which was the breastplate, right in the front on his chest. So there you have the four extra garments of the Kohen Gadol. You have the tzitz, which is the headband. You have the ephod, which is the apron. You've got the choshen, which is the breastplate. And then one more thing, which is the me'il. The me'il was a jacket. The me'il actually went under the apron. So the first thing the Kohen Gadol would put on top of the four articles of clothing that the regular Kohanim wore is he'd put on the me'il, the jacket. Then the jacket had no way, had no buttons or straps or belts or anything. It was just a jacket, but it would hang open. Then the ephod, the apron, went around him from the back and tied in the front. And that belt, which was attached to the apron, to the ephod, kept the me'il closed. And there was the choshen, the breastplate, and then, of course, the tzitz that went on the top. So those are the extra four garments of the Kohen Gadol. Now, the choshen, that breastplate, which everybody is familiar with, or most of people are familiar with, how did it stay on? The breastplate was we'll learn about it after we learn about the apron. We won't get to it this week. We'll get to Amir Hashem next week. So the breastplate, the choshen, was a piece of material with these stones embedded on it. But how did that piece of material stay affixed to the chest of the Kohen Gadol? So the way it stayed affixed to the Kohen Gadol was through the ephod. The ephod had three parts to it. It had three parts to it. I always wanted to demonstrate being a Kohen Gadol. It had three parts to it. So you had the main part, which is the apron. And the apron went all the way down to his ankles, and it went all the way up above his waist, and it was in the back. It came around him towards the front, and it hung all the way down. Now, how does that stay on? Well, it stays on two ways. First of all, there was a belt attached to the top. We're going to talk about that word I just used. Attached is the wrong word. I'm deliberately using it. But later, as we go through the verses, we will see exactly how that belt was connected to the actual apron. So the belt came around the front, that was tied in the front. And in addition, that may stay on, but you know, it could also slip down. It's not really very sturdy. In addition to that, there were the shoulder straps. And the shoulder straps came up along the back of the Kohen, came over his shoulders, and then what? Okay, so those shoulder straps came over the top, they're just hanging there. If you just look at the ephod, look at the picture over there, they're just hanging there, they're not attached to anything. So what kept those shoulder straps? The shoulder straps are meant to hold the ephod up. Well, if those shoulder straps aren't attached to anything, the whole thing will slip right off. So the answer is the choshen. The breastplate acted both as a connector for the straps of the apron, and was also held up by the apron, which means as follows: the breastplate, which picture a square, and a square, of course, has four corners, two at the top and two at the bottom. The two at the top are going to be connected, we'll see how as we learn through it, to the two shoulder straps of the ephod, of the apron. Those straps come up the back of the Kohen and then connect to the two top corners of the choshen. What about the two bottom corners of the choshen? Well, they're attached also to the ephod, to the part of the ephod over here, to the apron over here. So that means you now have a complete set. The ephod, the apron, and the choshen, the breastplate, really neither one can be worn independently. The choshen will just fall off. It's not held up by anything. The ephod, although it has a belt, is not very sturdy. It's really going to slip off. By bringing the shoulder straps up over the top and connecting it to the choshen, to the breastplate, and connecting the bottom part to the choshen as well, now you've got an article of clothing. Now you have something that will stay on. Both the choshen will stay on, and the ephod will stay on. You see that the ephod and the choshen work in tandem. They work together. Unlike all the, well, I shouldn't say unlike, but when you talk about the various articles of clothing, you should put the choshen, the breastplate, and the ephod, and the apron in one category. Even though they were two separate articles of clothing, neither one could remain on the Kohen without the other. Now, I want to describe something before we read the verses. I want to describe something which is critical to the understanding of the physical form of this apron, but also it's going to be critical to the understanding of the deeper meaning that we're going to touch on tonight. So, follow this carefully, please. These shoulder straps, as I said, the picture is a little bit misleading. The shoulder straps came down, they were up, they came over the shoulders, that's the front of them, and of course they went over the back and down the back of the Kohen. Where did they attach to the apron, to the ephod? So they did not attach to the back of the ephod. They actually came down the back of the Kohen, and then they also came around a little bit to the front, and they actually attached more towards the front of the apron. They were sewn to the ephod, to the apron part, to the front part of the apron, not to the back part of the apron. So picture a strap that begins somewhere, I don't want to say it's really in front, but it's more towards the side, but the front part of the side, and the strap runs, starting on a diagonal, goes up the back of the person, and then comes up over the shoulder. Some say that, unlike the picture over here, they actually crisscrossed in the back, which if you think about it, in terms of the article of clothing staying up and it doesn't slip off his shoulders, that makes a lot of sense. So they crisscrossed in the back, and that the left side came up over the right shoulder, and the right side came up over the left shoulder. Okay, we can, as I said, there are different renditions of it, exactly how it worked. But be that as it may, that belt, those shoulder straps, you were seeing in the front of the Kohen, they were seen on his shoulders. But if you look at the front of the Kohen Gadol, you would see the bottom of the shoulder straps, the part where the shoulder straps attached to the apron, towards the front of the apron. So that if he was facing you, you would see both ends of the straps. You would see the front ends, which are hanging over his shoulders, the top ends, I should say. You would also see the bottom ends, which were sewn to the front area of the ephod, to the of the apron.
Did they attach to the bottom of the choshen?
Ah, so the choshen, that's the point I'm trying to get to. The two bottom corners of the choshen were attached to the two bottom parts of the straps, of the shoulder straps. The shoulder straps were attached to the ephod on both the top and the bottom. The top part of the straps attached to the top part of the ephod. The bottom part of the straps, which came around to the front, attached to the bottom part of the choshen. So that the choshen, the straps of the ephod, I think I said ephod before, the straps of the ephod hold up the choshen. Let me see if I can do this. I'm not very good at this, but we will try our best. The picture, you can picture that as your choshen. Here's your straps running over the top. Again, we'll have to talk about how they attached. Now let's pretend the Kohen is invisible. So we're just going to follow the straps. The straps will come right down the back of the Kohen. They'll come down the back of the Kohen. They'll attach to the apron in the front. They'll attach to the apron in the front. And it is here that the bottom part of the choshen will be attached to the bottom part of the strap.
you get a picture of the body of the Kohen Gadol going in the middle over here, which is hard to picture. But you see what I'm saying? That the top part of the strap attached to the top part of the Choshen, the bottom part of the strap attached to the bottom part of the Choshen, and the apron is here.
The question is, where do they get all the stones?
Okay, hold on a second. Yeah.
So in this picture here, it says belt, and it's pointing to something here on the effort. Are you talking, is that the same thing, the same strap, or is
separate? No, this is the shoulder straps. I'm talking only about the shoulder straps. The belt will get through separately.
So that's, even though it's here in the front, where the...
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. You have to be careful looking at pictures. It's always dangerous looking at pictures because the different conditions and,
this is just the strap.
Yeah, this is just the shoulder strap. Again, there are three parts. There's the apron itself, the belt, and the shoulder straps. This is all about the shoulder straps. Okay, so let's read the verses inside. And we'll see as we go through. Hopefully, we'll be able to put it all together. So, on page 466, pasuk vav, verse 6. Ve'asu es ha'ifod, they shall make the apron. What is it made out of? Zahav, right? Techeles, that's blue wool. Ve'argamon, purple wool. Ve'solas, shani, and red wool, v'sheish mashzar, and linen. We talked about this last time, that you have wool and linen together. Ma'aseh choshev, and it is made with the craft of weaving. Choshev, we had before, is weaving, not sewing, but weaving.
Belt, it says here.
What's that?
We're back to the belt again, I'm sorry. It says belt.
What's this? No, that's later. We'll get to that later. Right here, this doesn't mean that. This means
I'm
weaving.
I'm not going to look at this picture.
Okay, this means weaving. Sheteches eifos chavros, two shoulder straps that were attached. Two shoulder straps attached. I'm sorry, I lost the voice. Yelo shall be for it. El shnei kitzosav, on its two sides. Vichubar, and attached. Now, I want to draw your attention to the word attached, which is repeated in this pasuk. It says, two shoulder straps attached shall be for it on its two sides, attached. So the word attached is repeated. That's significant. V'cheshev afudaso asher alav, there you have the word belt.
Yes.
Okay. The belt of the apron which was on it, kima'asehu, it's going to be made the same way as the apron. The belt will be made the same as the apron. However, very important, mimenu yiyeh, it shall be part of the apron itself, meaning it will not be made separately and then attached. Rather, the belt will be a piece of the apron. Same material. Zahav, tcheles, v'argamon, v'salas, shani, v'sheish, marzar. Gold, blue wool, purple wool, red wool, and linen. So let's pause here for a moment. Very, very important distinction that the Torah is making. Again, there are three parts to this garment. There's the apron itself, which we'll call the main part, which gets very little print in the Torah because it's just an apron. Pretty simple. There are the straps, the shoulder straps, and there is the belt. The shoulder straps and the belt are very different. The shoulder straps are fashioned independently of the apron, and then they are attached to the apron. Whereas the belt is fashioned along with the apron. When they're weaving the apron, they weave it right into a belt. It's all part of the same garment. The belt is not a separate piece which is then sewn on to the apron. Rather, the belt is a natural piece of the apron itself. It's woven part and parcel of the apron. So we really only have two pieces of this garment. I keep calling the belt a separate piece, but it's not really a separate piece. The belt is really just part of the apron. The shoulder straps, on the other hand, are made separately and then attached to the apron. So, let's just emphasize this point. Which part of the ephod, of the apron, is going to be the part that's going to hold the choshen, hold the breastplate. It's going to be the straps.
Oh.
It's going to be the straps. And that's the part that is fashioned separately and then attached. Not the belt, which is made as part and parcel of the apron, but rather the piece which is made separately and then attached to it is going to be the piece that also is affixed to the breastplate, to the choshen.
But you were saying, you know, if something's attached, you know, it's not secure. It's
That's moving. Right.
This is attached. The belt is attached. You would mm-hmm. think that would be more secure.
You think so. So there's no question that when something is made as part and parcel of the item, it's a more... It's a more solid connection, right? When you're sewing something together, it's a seam; it can come apart, right? There were no seams between the belt and the apron; it was made all together with it. But there was a seam where the strap connected to the apron. That was just it was sewn together. So you're right; it would be seem to be less secure, and that's significant. We'll talk about that.
But it needed to hold some the top and the bottom. Having a belt really
yes,
would be
yes, yes, but it could have been made as one piece rather than make it as a separate
piece. They could have made the straps a part of it too.
Right, could have, but they didn't. So we'll see about that.
I hope they sewed real well.
They did. Pasuk Tes, verse 9. V'lakachta es shetei avnei shoham. You shall take two shoham stones. I'm not sure exactly what shoham is.
They don't translate it.
Yeah, it's a type of precious stone. Ufitachta aleihem, and you shall engrave on them shmos b'nei Yisrael, the names of the Jews, meaning the tribes. Shisha mishemosam alo evan oechas, six of their names on one stone. Ve'es shmos ha'shisha no sarim, and the six remaining names alo evan ashenis on the second stone. Kisoldo sam. According to the way that they were born. According to the way that they were born. Which means in the order that they were born. So what order is that? There is a dispute in the Gemara. What order were the names in? There are two opinions.
Of course.
One opinion is that they were written as Yehuda. Should I do it in, I'll do it in English? I'll do it in English. There was Yehuda. Shimon. Reuven. Shimon. Yeah. Levi. B. After that, it would be Dan. And then Naphtali. And then on the other one, you would have God, Asher, Yisachar,
Zebulun,
Yosef, and Binyamin. Okay. Now, the drawback of writing this in English is because we're going to have to count letters, in the Hebrew letters. But it was written essentially in the way they were born, except that Yehuda was out of order.
Yeah.
Yehuda was taken where he should have gone fourth, mm-hmm. He was moved to first. So when it says that they were in the order of their birth, it's referring to the second stone. This would be stone number one, this would be stone number two. So the second stone was in the order of their birth. But the first stone was not in the order of their birth because Yehuda was moved from number four to number one. We know Yehuda, of course, is the
leader.
He's the leader. He's the king. He's the Melech. So he's put on top. So aside from that one change, the first opinion says it was essentially in the order they were born. The second stone is certainly in the order that they were born. That's one opinion. The second opinion has let's count letters because that way when I erase and rewrite you won't be confused. This is very easy because most of the names of the tribes have five letters. Most of them have five letters. Reuven has five letters. Resh, Aleph, Vav,
You're putting it Yehudah.
Oh, so Yehud is five letters. Yud, hey, vav, dal, hey. Five letters. Reuben is five letters. Reish, alf, vav, fez, nun. Shimon is five letters. Shimem, ayin, vav, nun. So these all are five letters. Naphtali has five letters. Nun, pei, taf, lamed, yud. All five letters. So it's five, 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 and five is 20. And it's very easy because Levi has three and Dan has two. That's another five. So you've got 25 letters between all these names. 25 letters. The other side, so also most of them have five. First of all, Gad and Asher combined have five. Gad is two and Asher is three. That's five letters. Yisachar has five letters. Yud, Sin, Sin, Chaf, Resh. It's five letters. Zivulun has five letters. Zayin, Vez, Vav, Lamed, Nun. That's Zivulun. Has five letters. Now here we have a little bit of a problem. Yosef only has four, and Binyamin normally only has five. Binyamin is normally spelled Bez Nun Yud Mem Nun. It's usually spelled with only five letters. On the Avnei Shoham, on these stones, Binyamin was spelled with two Yuds. Bez Nun Yud Mem Yud Nun. Another Yud was put in order to make it a full ten between the two of them, which means you have 25 letters on this side as well. And that was important, that there were 25 letters on one stone and 25 letters on the other stone. So that's one opinion. The second opinion will also have 25 letters on each stone, but the names will be a little bit rearranged. How will they be rearranged? According to the second opinion, we're going to have... Let's see if I can do this without... No, I'm going to have to be ready. So the second opinion has it as follows. Has Reuven, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda, Yisachar, and Zebulun. And Zebulun. If you do it this way, the problem is you have too many letters on the one side. I'm trying to remember what he does with that. Yeah, there's too many letters on one side. Right, they ask the question, there's too many letters. But according to this, the second opinion, the other side had Binyamin, Dan, Naphtali, Gad, Asher, and then Yosef. So, according to this, there's nothing, neither stone is in the order that they were born.
Right.
Because the order they were born, they're not in the order they were born. So, this opinion says that when it says the order that they were born, it doesn't mean the order that they were born. It just says according to the way they were born. That's all it says. It doesn't say the order of the way they were born. All it says is according... How do they translate it here?
According to the
birth. According to their birth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but implies a certain order.
I understand.
Order.
The second opinion says it means the spelling was the way it was when they were born. Not the way they were called later in life. Moshe refers, for instance, to Reuven as the Reuveni tribe, and Shimon is the Shimoni tribe. So the Torah is saying, don't think that they were spelled the way that Moshe said it later on. Rather, they were spelled according to the way that they were named when they were born. Either way, we have the two sides of it. There is a problem in the second opinion because, as I said, you end up with too many letters on one side and too few on the other side. That's an issue which is dealt with in the Gemara. But you've got the two sides, two different stones, and 25 names on each side. 25 letters, excuse me, on each side. Now, what's the significance of these names? So, the Torah continues. Pasuk Yud Aleph, verse 11. Maaseh Harash Evan. This was the work of, it says here, a jeweler's craft. It means that it was the craft of embedding stones and engraving stones. Pituchei Chosam, it would be the engraving of a signet ring. A Chosam is a signet ring. We don't have too many signet rings around these days, but we're all familiar with the signet ring from the Purim story. That was what Haman wanted, the signet ring of Achashverosh. That's a very significant thing.
So people were familiar with what a signet ring was, and this engraving of the stone was similar to that of a signet ring. Tifatach es shnei ha'avanim, that's how you should engrave the two stones. Al shemos b'nei Yisrael, about the names of the Jewish people. Musabos mishbitzos zahav, they would be surrounded by gold settings. Ta'aseh osam, that's how you should make them. So you're going to take gold settings. These gold settings will be affixed we'll see what they'll be affixed to in a moment, but the stones will be placed inside these gold settings. The problem is that you can't take a stone and affix it to material, because stone is not malleable. In order to somehow get the stone to stay on the clothing, on the material, unless you have some sort of a glue, which is generally not that strong, it's very difficult to get a stone to stay where you want it to stay. That's why you have a setting. That's why rings have settings. Settings are made of metal, because metal, when you heat them up, are malleable. They can be molded. Right. So you can make the metal fit around the stone in a way that the metal will hold the stone. And the metal is easier to affix to material than a stone. That's the purpose of a setting. So the stones were in gold settings. Now, where are you going to put them? V'samtas sheteha avanim, you shall place the two stones, al kisfos ha'ifod, on the straps of the shoulder straps of the apron. Avnei zikaron livnei Yisrael, these are going to be stones of remembrance for the Jewish people. V'nasa aharon es shemosam, Aaron will carry their names lifnei Hashem, before Hashem. Al shetechen seifav, on his two shoulders, lizikaron, as a remembrance, as Rashi tells us, this way Hashem will remember the righteousness of the Jewish people and remember us for good, and it will stand as a testament to us when the service is being done in the Beis HaMikdash, in the temple. And that is the end of the discussion of the apron. Although we will bring it up again when we get to the choshen, to the breastplate, when we talk about how to get that breastplate to stay on the kohen. So, now that we've gone through it, we've gone through how many verses? We've gone through seven psukim, seven verses about the apron, about the ephod. Which part of the ephod would you say is the most significant? It seems like the shoulder straps, which you would have thought should be nothing but a method of holding up the apron, and you would have thought the main part is the apron, because that's what it is, but it seems that the discussion of the ephod gets hijacked by the straps. These straps become very important. There's a lot of discussion about these straps, the stones that have the Jewish people's names on it, which are a remembrance for the Jewish people. Where do they go? They go on the straps. Those straps are the straps that hold up the choshen. It seems funny that that is the focus of the paragraph that talks about the ephod. Talks about the ephod. Yeah.
Doesn't the choshen have the names of the tribes?
Yes. Also.
So we have the stones and the choshen.
Yeah, we'll get to the choshen later.
It has both.
Both have the stones. Both have the names. Yeah, we'll get to that later. The Gemara tells us that each of the garments of the Kohen, of the Kohen Gadol, atoned for a different sin. Each one atoned for a different sin. Obviously, that's going to give us some insight into the garment itself, to know which sin correlates with which garment. The ephod, the apron, correlates to the sin that we're going to have the hardest time relating to, because it correlates to the sin of avodah zarah, of idolatry. The sin of idolatry is atoned for with the ephod, with the apron. Now, I say we have a hard time relating to this, because we no longer have a drive to worship idols. It used to be, as we've described many times, it used to be a very, very powerful drive. It was the most powerful of all the Yetzirahs, of all the evil inclinations that a person has. The most powerful drive he had was to worship idols. And it got so bad that people couldn't fight it anymore, and they were succumbing to this most terrible urge, so that the Anshei Knesset HaGadol, the men of the Great Assembly, had to pray to Hashem to remove that drive, and Hashem did. And that's why for us it seems silly, because it is silly. But it's the reason why we can look at it and say it's a silly thing to worship an inanimate object is because we don't have the drive to do it. Had we had the drive to do it, we would not be able to control ourselves. We would go, as the Gemara says, we would run to the nearest altar, which would be on every street corner. We would run to the nearest altar, grab the nearest animal, and slaughter it, and offer it to the pagan gods. That's what we would do if that drive still existed. It was a very difficult drive to fight. And that's why it was removed from humanity, because we couldn't deal with it anymore. We couldn't succeed in our fight against that most terrible urge.
When did this happen? The
beginning of the Second Temple Era. That's when they got rid of it. The ephod atones for that sin. So we have to put ourselves back into the time frame where there was that sin, where it was a rampant problem. And the ephod atones for it. Now, why and how does the ephod atone for the sin of idolatry? What does the ephod do that it should atone for idolatry?
It's got the names of all the tribes twice, and Abraham left...
It has the names only once.
I mean, the stones on the itself, and it also causes the attachment to hold on the choshen.
Yeah, but the choshen is going to atone for something else.
Oh.
That's a separate garment.
Oh, okay. So the names then, and Abraham left his father who was an idolater.
Okay, so you're saying that the fact that it represents the Jewish people atones for that sin. Since we're the ones who represent monotheism, so therefore it atones for the sin of idolatry. Okay.
Maybe because it covers the whole body.
Okay, and how would that atone for idolatry?
Well, because you could wind up worshiping a human form.
Okay. And so by covering up the human form, so it reminds us to think not about a human being as a deity, but rather of Hashem. Okay? Mm-hmm. What is an apron worn for? Why do we wear aprons?
In the kitchen, cooking.
Keep clean.
It could be while cooking, and it could be while doing any other task that involves mess. So an apron is something a person does when they're involved with something that is that they're involved with something that is dirty, and they want to keep their clothes clean.
Oh, all the blood and everything.
Okay, so the job of a kohen was a messy job. There was blood, and it was messy. It was not a clean job. It was something which, if you were a kohen, you had to get your hands dirty. It was a dirty job. So the ephod represents something that somebody wears when they are doing a job that they get dirty doing. Now, most of the time, when a person is doing a job, let's say a person has a job that they are hired to do, that it gets them dirty when they do it, and they need to wear something to protect their clothing. Most of the time, not all the time, but most of the time, is that type of labor, the kind of job which is a is that a job? How do I want to put this? When we picture putting on an apron, so it's a job in which would the let's put it this way: does the President of the United States ever have to put on an apron?
No.
Okay, if there's a job that you got to get dirty, someone else is going to do it for him. right? He's not going to wear something that's going to get his clothes dirty, right? When you do a job that gets dirty, it's not something that is done by the leader. Now, you have jobs that you get dirty, which are actually very respectable jobs. A surgeon comes to mind, right? That's why they wear scrubs, because their clothes get all dirty, right? So it's a respectable job. Nevertheless, somebody in a high position of authority is not going to be the one getting dirty. In fact, David HaMelech, King David, one of the things that he says is to Hashem is, I am not like the other kings of the world. The other kings of the world, they would never get their hands dirty. They always stand back and let everybody else do the dirty work. But me, whenever it comes to a halachic issue, a Torah issue, which requires getting dirty, which in order to investigate, in order to understand it, you got to get dirty, which sometimes is the case. There are many halachic things that require getting dirty in order to verify what's happening. It says, I'm not afraid to get dirty. It's my job. My job is to rule about the Torah, and if it requires getting dirty, I'll get dirty. I don't stand on principle. I don't look at myself as being all high and mighty, and I can't get dirty. That's one of the things that King David he's praised for, that he's willing to get dirty. But typically, the king is not going to get himself dirty. Which means, if you're wearing the apron, then you are doing a service. An apron represents service. That's what an apron represents. Because if I'm getting dirty, that means I'm not the king. That's how I'm getting dirty. So I am serving the king in getting dirty. That's what an apron is. So when the Kohen Gadol wears an apron, that apron represents the fact that he is performing service for Hashem, for a higher authority. Now, even though this apron was a beautiful apron, this is the kind of apron you want to wear another apron over this apron to keep it from getting dirty, right? Which they couldn't do. You weren't allowed to wear more clothing. You could only wear what the Torah says to wear. But this is a beautiful, beautiful apron. Nevertheless, it's still an apron. And therefore, the apron is to represent that the Kohen Gadol, the high priest, so you think he's the leader. No, he's not. He is serving Hashem. He is the leader of the servers. The Kohanim were all serving Hashem. And he's the leader of those who are serving Hashem. I don't want to say anything demeaning. He's the Kohen Gadol. But it's almost like the chief butler. It's almost like that. Of course, God forbid. I mean, the Kohen Gadol was of the greatest people, of the Jewish people. I'm just trying to point out that, nevertheless, the Kohanim, the priests, were all serving Hashem. And the apron represents service. That's what it represents.
So were there a lot of them?
No, only the Kohen. You mean, did he change into other ones? There were backup clothing. If clothing got messy, there were other ones to wear. Yeah. But only the Kohen Gadol wore an apron. Right. The other ones didn't. So, wearing the apron represents service. At the end of the day, the problem with idolatry is that it is service to the wrong thing. It's service, and it's the wrong service. It's serving a pagan god rather than serving the one true God. That's what Avodah Zarah is. It's Avodah. Avodah means service. But it's Avodah Zarah. It's a strange service to a strange entity, not to the real entity, to Hashem. There's Avodah Hashem, service of Hashem, and then there is Avodah Zarah, which is service to a strange entity. And therefore, it's a misplaced service. So the ephod is an atonement. It represents an atonement for idolatry, because of all the articles of clothing of the Kohen Gadol, that's the one that represents service the most. And so it is showing service in the correct way, which is of Hashem. So That's what the ephod is all about. That's what the apron is all about. The apron has a belt. That belt is part of the apron, which means that we're not going to look at this belt as a separate entity, and we're going to understand it to be a necessary component of the apron, because an apron doesn't stay where it is. You've got to somehow close it. So there's a belt to close the apron together. As opposed to the belt that was worn by all the Kohanim, which went over the tunic, that was a separate article of clothing. That was just a standalone belt. That's what it was. When we get to it, we'll discuss what did the belt atone for. That was a separate entity. So the belt atoned for something else. But the belt of the ephod, of the apron, did not atone for something else, because the belt of the apron was part of the apron. So it just was part of it, and it connected, and you tied it at the top. But the straps, those shoulder straps, were a separate entity. They weren't a separate garment, but they were made separately and then attached. At the bottom, they were attached to the front of the apron, and at the top, they came over the top and hung loosely over his shoulders, where you would then put the choshen. So, that means that you have a choshen, a breastplate. Now, we haven't gotten to it yet, but the choshen is going to have a very special component to it, a very powerful force within the choshen itself. Anybody know what was within the choshen? Okay. God's special name was written on a piece of parchment and placed. We're going to see when we learn about it next week, please God, that the choshen was a piece of material that was, I described it as a square. It actually was a rectangle that was doubled over. It was folded over. So it actually, it did look like a square, but it was two layers, and it was folded over on itself. So there was a pocket that you could slide something into. And the name of God was slid into the pocket that was formed by these two pieces of material being folded over. And then on the outside one is where all the stones were. That special name of God, which was inserted, allowed for the Choshen to have power. And the Kohen Gadol was able, in certain circumstances, to ask Hashem for an answer to a question. He would ask a query to Hashem, and Hashem would answer with the stones of the Choshen, not the stones of the ephod that we just learned about today, but the stones we'll learn about next week, lighting up. Various stones lighting up would give different answers to different questions. We'll describe the process, please God, next week or the week after. We'll discuss how that works. This Choshen was obviously a very powerful force, and it's something which gave the Kohen Gadol supernatural power. It was a nace, it was a miracle. And it was worn on the body of the Kohen Gadol. But there's no way, as we said, for a square piece of garment to remain on anybody. It'll just fall down. So how did it stay on the Kohen Gadol? It was attached, both at the top and on the bottom. What was it attached to? The straps of the ephod. So the straps become the way that the choshen is attached to the Kohen Gadol, and they also are the thing that hold up the apron, which means that the straps become the interface between the apron and the choshen. Remember we said, the apron doesn't really stand on its own because it'll fall down. The choshen certainly won't stand on its own, it'll fall down. By attaching the two together, you now have a uniform piece that can stay on the body of a person. What attaches the two pieces, the apron, the ephod, and the choshen, the breastplate, together? The interface are the straps. Those straps are the things that are the connectors, which is why I told you before that word attached was repeated in the verse when we talked about the straps, because the straps were attachers. They were connectors. That's what the straps were. They were the interface between the ephod, the apron, and the choshen, and the breastplate. What was the most significant feature of these straps? The stones which had on them? The names of the Jewish people. It is the names of the Jewish people themselves. It is us that were the connectors between the ephod and the choshen. What allows the Kohen Gadol to wear this apron? What allows the Kohen Gadol to wear the choshen, the breastplate with the supernatural power? What allows that to happen? The straps. What do the straps represent? The Jewish people. This is a powerful, powerful message that the Kohen Gadol wore every day. And that is on many levels. First of all, the Kohen Gadol puts on this garment. It's very special. Only he can wear it. No one else can wear this garment. No other Kohen can wear it. No non-Kohen can wear it. There is shatnez. There's woolen linen in this garment. No one's allowed to wear woolen linen. We talked about this last time, that woolen linen was a special thing that only the Kohen wore. The Kohen Gadol can wear this apron and no one else. He's required to wear it. And he's got on this breastplate with these supernatural powers. This constant miracle that he's wearing with God's name inserted. And he's wearing it on his personage. If you're the Kohen Gadol, don't you think you might feel a little special? Right? Which he was very special. He was very special. He deserved it. He was of the greatest people in his generation, and he wore this special clothing. This is why in the Second Temple era, there was such a desire to be the Kohen Gadol, to get to wear the clothing. It was a special thing. In fact, the Gemara relates that one of the famous stories between Hillel and Shammai, with the various people who tried to convert, and they first went to Shammai and then they went to Hillel. One of them went to Shammai and said, "Convert me on condition that I'll be able to wear the garments of the Kohen Gadol." He wanted to wear the garments. And of course, Shammai told him, "No, nothing doing. You can't do that." But it was a real drive to wear them. They were special clothing. The Kohen Gadol puts on these clothing, and it's pretty special. The message he gets when he puts them on is the only thing that is allowing this apron, this beautiful apron, with the shatnez, with the woolen linen in it, to stay on me. And the only thing that's allowing this supernatural choshen, this breastplate, to remain on me, are the Jewish people. The people that I am representing, they're the ones that are enabling me to wear these garments. Without those people, I would never be able to wear these garments. I am not a product of my own doing. I am a product of a people, a very special people, and that's why I'm able to wear these garments. So the message to the Kohen Gadol was a powerful message of the Jewish people being the interface between these two garments.
But the apron also represents humility. He's serving
them. He's serving, that's correct. Well, he's serving Hashem, but he's the representative of the Jewish people. But that's all the message to the Kohen Gadol. But the Torah says that the stones were a remembrance to Hashem. That's what it says, that he would wear them, and Aaron would carry the names of the Jewish people before Hashem. So Hashem sees the names of the Jewish people, and he sees the Jewish people in what light? In what lens is he looking through as he looks at the Jewish people? Of course, Hashem knows everything, and he knows all of our good parts, and unfortunately he knows all of our bad parts too, right? He knows everything. But he can choose to look at us through one lens or through a different lens. And we, of course, always hope that he'll look at us through a good lens. We want him to look at our positive points. We want him to ignore our not-so-great things. We want him to emphasize our positive points. We know Hashem does not forget anything, and everything in the end gets remembered. But Hashem can certainly emphasize the good parts, and that's certainly what we're hoping he does. Here, Hashem wants the Kohen Gadol to wear the names of the Jewish people in a capacity of bringing together the ephod and the choshen, and acting as the conduit for the Kohen Gadol to wear these garments. He wants to see the Jewish people not as those who aren't living up to their potential. He wants to see the Jewish people as those who are living up to their potential of bringing together these special garments on the Kohen Gadol to be the perfect service of Hashem. That's the message that Hashem wants to be conveyed by the Kohen Gadol. And finally, what about the message for us, for the Jewish people themselves? We see the Kohen Gadol entering the Beis HaMikdash, wearing these garments, and our names are on those straps. We can't walk into the Beis HaMikdash. If you're not a Kohen, you can't go in. I'm not a Kohen. You can't go in. You can't go into the special places. We certainly can't wear the clothing. And we can't do the service that he's doing. But we see him go in, and he's going in with our names engraved in bold letters on his shoulders, on those straps that connect that very special, those two very special garments together. And to us, the message is that, number one, we are loved by Hashem. Look at what He wants. Look at what He set up over here. And it's empowering. It says to us, this is what we need to strive for. This is what we need to live up to. This is who we are. We're not the people who sometimes speak Lashon Hara when we're not supposed to, and the people who don't, to who shirk our responsibilities sometimes, and we don't always do the right thing, and we kind of feel bad about it. That's not who we are. We're the people who can be warned by the Kohen Gadol and walk into the Holy of Holies on Yom Kippur. Well, Yom Kippur he doesn't wear that garment. Sorry, we'll take that back. But we're the ones that the Kohen Gadol can wear and go into the Beis HaMikdash and be able to perform the service. So it is something which raises us up. It gives us that picture of who we are meant to be. That is the straps of the apron. Next week, please God, we will go through the choshen. The choshen is a little bit longer. I don't think we'll finish. We might finish it in 1 week. We'll try. But there we will discuss all the details of this choshen, which connects to the apron.
For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.